This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia, the place you need to be for the next hour for information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact.
If you want to get your ideas or you want to help others get theirs into action, then you are in the right place for the next 60 minutes. And if you need to get out of your head and get things done, then stay tuned for the next hour. Hi, I'm Sylvia Henderson, the maven of implementation, and I'm honored that you've chosen to spend your most valuable resource in your life, your time, with me today. So this show is about ideas, getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who've put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices that you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And that's who I have today. I have the latter, an expert who has, well, actually, she's implemented her own ideas too, but an expert who can help you implement yours, especially if you're in an organization and you're focused on trying to get ideas implemented in your company or in your nonprofit. How do you find the ideas? How do you find the hidden gems, the ideas that are hidden in plain sight, so that you can grow your business or increase the reach of your nonprofit? And so my guest today is Susan Trivers. Susan, welcome to Idea Success.
Thank you.
With Sylvia.
Glad to be here, Sylvia. Thank you.
And for those who are not looking at the actual write-up, let me just tell you the program is titled, Are Ideas in Your Organization Hidden in Plain Sight? And so today we're going to discover the three elements that every organization must have to maximize revenue and profit and uncover ideas hidden in plain sight within your business with the leading voice on business growth and opportunity, Susan Trivers. So that's the description of the program. Let us launch right into the program. And so, Susan, you and I have been colleagues for quite a number of years. We've become friends. We both speak and consult and coach and all of that good stuff. You know, you had an idea that was different from mine. And so tell listeners a little bit about what ideas led you to the business that you're now doing and to focus on what you're now focusing on.
Well, I agree that we've been friends and colleagues for a long time, which, of course, is a delight to me, and I would encourage all listeners to have partners like Sylvia and I are. But to answer your question, what happened that made me think people and businesses could benefit from the concept of finding opportunities that are hidden in plain sight? So I'd like to tell a little story. I have a client that has an unusual expertise. They are experts at washing, cleaning, and storing used military equipment. So they were talking to me about their expectation that the opportunities to do that would be dwindling in the coming years as our military withdraws from some of the places where they'd been for a long time.
Okay.
And so they were wondering if there were opportunities to use this unusual expertise, washing and storing very dirty equipment, heavy equipment, and through a series of questions, we realized that there are commercial businesses who also have equipment that needs to be washed and stored for some period of time. And so that conversation took place a year ago, and it made me realize that I thought this was an opportunity that was very clear in my mind, and yet for them it was hidden in plain sight. Because they'd focused on military customers. And so a year later, they're now doing as much business with commercial customers as they are doing with military customers. And so that launched my effort on helping companies and organizations find opportunities that are hidden in plain sight.
Isn't that amazing how And actually what I find, too, in different ways, how we are so close to our own stuff, as I like to say, that we can't see the forest for the trees. Or
yeah.
The hidden in plain sight there is, wow. You now consult with other business owners or and other leadership teams on how to find the ideas that are within their organizations?
Yes, I do. So, you know, you started to mention one thing, which is that people are often too close so they can't see the forest for the trees. And in my experience, there are a handful of reasons why people are so close that they miss opportunities that are hidden in plain sight. Number one, as you said, they're too close to their business. Another thing that's very interesting is they're so immersed in their routines that they don't set aside some time to ask the questions that we'll talk about in a little bit. Their days are very full. You know, we're chugging along, keeping the business going. And I would like to say I'm particularly work with companies that have a going concern or are startups with a lot of expertise coming with them to the startup. So they're not, you know, starting from scratch, new industry, new product, whatever. They're bringing along with them a lot of experience. And then a lot of times companies have cultures and policies that reward them for doing what they always do. You know, this is the XYZ way. Well, if it's the XYZ way, then you get the message that we're not looking to do things in the ABC way. And the other thing that's so interesting, and actually the story that I just told is a little bit of a reflection of it. In most cases, there's no crisis that precipitates any kind of discussion about what are alternatives. Now, in that company, it wasn't an immediate crisis, but they were anticipating the reduction in opportunities, and so they were saying, wow, you know, we better get ahead of the curve. But in many cases, you know, you have businesses that are doing really well. They're going right along, and so there's no crisis which makes them stop and say, wow, is there something else that we could be doing based on, you know, what we're currently doing? So those are reasons why people miss opportunities that are hidden in plain sight.
So if there's no crises, and we're moving along, thinking we're doing well. What is the prompt? What prompts them to say, we might be missing something? We should call Susan to help us figure out what we're missing.
Well, you know, so that's great, thanks, because most of the time they don't have a crisis, or they don't say, oh, we need to call Susan to find opportunities that are hidden in plain sight. They call me for a couple of reasons. Particularly, they say, well, our revenue is good, our profits are okay, we would like to increase our revenue, and even more important is increase the profits from the revenue that we currently or will generate. And so that's what people don't say. I'm looking for opportunities hidden in plain sight, Susan, can you help me? They say, we want to grow. And we want to grow both our revenue and our profits. And so once I'm talking to them, it leads to the conversation about, you know, what one of the ways we can do that, the primary way to increase revenue and profits, is by looking for opportunities that are already, as you said in your intro, within the organization. And so that's what gets this question of, you know, what opportunities are hidden in plain sight going. So if anybody's looking for, you know, is puzzling over how to increase revenue and profits without major investment, that's the kind of person that I help, you know, most of the time. And like this, you know, company that I told you about at the beginning, they had very little investment to make in attracting commercial clients or customers for their washing and storing because they already did that.
True.
Was, you know, very little investment, additional investment to attract an entire new customer group.
So a lot of listeners, before I get into the meat of, you know, what are those questions that we should be asking, a lot of listeners are like service providers. Well, and I know the washing equipment is a service.
I know what you're saying.
But I'm thinking a lot of listeners are, you know, consultants or coaches or trainers or, hey, speakers. And
right.
Does the same concept apply to them?
I think it absolutely does. And maybe this would be a good time for me to talk about the three elements, curiosity, awareness, and skills.
Okay.
That when you have what all the things that you mentioned, Sylvia, and many more, are what I call knowledge work. And that is, I think, something to be very proud of, that the value that you provide to your buyers comes from your knowledge, from your head. And the cool thing about knowledge work is that no one else has the knowledge that you have. I mean, people may think that they all know the same thing, but each person sees it, appreciates it, understands it, articulates it, and derives value from it in their own unique way. Okay? So if you do knowledge work, and that includes lawyers and accountants and designers and all kinds of other creative people. And I would also say that, you know, people who are in technology, I mean, these days we're not talking about building big hardware. We're talking about the creative impulse that created an iPhone, for example. So that's all knowledge work, even if in the end there's some tangible hard copy, you know, product. So
right.
That's all knowledge work. And there's just so much. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, landscape designers and people who design homes and people who write. A lot of knowledge work. People who train, as you said. So they need to stop thinking, I want to be like everybody else. And they see someone they admire and they try to copy them. Then you cannot be as good as that person is because they have the unique knowledge that's in their head and you don't have it.
Right.
So this is where, you know, the curiosity, awareness, and skills comes in. And if I could, I'd like to just give our listeners a little definition of each of those three.
That was my next request. Okay.
Okay, good. So I think about how as kids, kids are often admonished not to be curious. You know, you have the old curiosity killed the cat. Oh, my gosh, if I'm curious, I'll be dead. So,
I know.
And then, of course, you know, you have kids want to figure out what's going on in the kitchen and their parents don't want them to make a mess or to get burned or get cut by a knife. I mean, all of those things are reasonable, but they tend to tamp down curiosity. And
right.
So I think that, you know, you need to be aware that curiosity is not going to kill you and that's really the way to grow. So some of the questions that I ask people to think about is, you know, what could be done that hasn't been done before? What could you do next? Or you ask yourself, what could I do next? You ask yourself or your company, what do we love to do? I mean, really love to do. Because that is not always what you actually do. You do
True.
What you think is going to make money, but not necessarily what you love to do. You could also say, what am I not doing? And you could ask, what is no one else doing? And my other final question is, what gaps can I fill? And I think there are, you know, probably any person could answer one of those questions and then come up with another half a dozen questions to further refine their answer or develop their answer. We're not trying to narrow. We're actually trying to expand. So that's my definition of curiosity. What else can I do? What is not being done that I could do? What are the gaps? Then I think that there's a difference between curiosity and awareness. So curiosity is wondering about stuff. Awareness is having a lot of information and perception as much as data. In fact, to me, when people do market research or any kind of research and they're looking to prove an idea by using someone else's data, that's not awareness. That's just information that doesn't help you create the light bulb moment. But awareness is perception. Let's say that you want to, let's say that you're a coach and you go to an event, a networking event, and you start talking about coaching and you see some people are eager and other people can't wait to get away from you.
Okay.
And you get a sense of like, uh-oh, they must have had a bad experience with coaching. So it's easy, of course, to follow up with people who are eager to be coached. It's harder to follow up with people who are running away from coaching, and that yet may be your best bet, at least to increase your awareness of what are the issues that people have around coaching. And so that's why I talk about perception, really paying attention to what's not being said as well as what's being said. You want to look at your market and see, you know, are there 10 companies that are all pretty much doing the same thing? So that's more your observation than getting data from some other source. I think awareness has got to be generated from within, from you, from your company. And, you know, everybody can be out there looking to become more aware, everybody in your company and your organization. So, yeah, so awareness is maybe the hardest to define and yet very definitely a critical component of finding opportunities that are hidden in plain sight. My third one, skills. So a lot of companies that I work with actually have their strongest area of the three is skills. But I'll say that, you know, for me, when I talk about skills, I'm not talking about your subject matter expertise. You know, if you're a coach, I'm assuming that you know how to coach. I have a filmmaker client. They know how to make films. So an architect knows how to draw buildings, you know, whatever. It's the skills, the business fundamental skills, finance, planning, execution, keeping track of sales, marketing, you know, the IT that's required to support your idea that you're trying to get out there in the marketplace. So this is the fundamental skills of doing business, not your subject matter expertise. Does that help?
Okay, so the skills are all the things that, especially creatives, oh my God, people who have,
yeah,
have creative kind of companies, you know, they created those businesses for, and I'm probably part of that category, because we love doing what we do.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm on radio. Okay, oh, shucks, we can't, we, you know. Yeah, I have to measure and track and find budget and all that stuff.
Right.
So, okay. One of the things,
right,
when you were saying the awareness, on the awareness piece, I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
So how I perceive someone's reaction or how I perceive what's going on in relation to my business or myself is could be clouded by my own stuff. If that makes sense. It could be, you know, like you were talking about the consultant, and because
right,
we're talking about an established business, I'll say a consultancy, a consulting
right,
practice that's more than just a startup. And I'm going out and networking, talking about what my consulting business does, and I watch somebody walk away. How do I keep that perception from being clouded by my own either insecurity or negative last year's results, that kind of thing?
Right. Well, I that's a really important question, and I would say that in for this conversation about finding opportunities that are hidden in plain sight, I'm not discounting that we all have that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So each of us is required in order to develop awareness, to sort of have some of that self-awareness, and to focus on the reaction of the other person. And so maybe that other person walks away because they've had a bad experience with consulting or with a consultant or whatever, like I said about coaching. And your first reaction might be, ugh, they hated me. And it's just like that person from a year ago. So have that thought, then push it away and say, what was I seeing, what was I perceiving as the problem that this person has with consulting?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it might be worth, you know, quickly following up with that person and saying, you know, I really was interested in your reaction when I told you I was a consultant. Is there something that you know, some experience you had? You know, you might actually find like 10 things that you would
ooh,
never
I
have
like
guessed.
That. Yeah,
and
in that conversation, win them over. Yeah,
exactly.
And in that conversation, yeah, cool.
Right, and so, you know, you're not, you have, I mean, of course, all of us when we're doing this, and this may fall into the skills thing, you have to be able, you have to be skillful at talking to people.
Right,
and
right.
And at not being, you know, the hard sell, the always be closing, but to be open to establishing relationships, which may over time turn into some business, may not, but you know, if you're trying to close all the time, it's never going to be a relationship, and that you're unlikely to have the kind of business that you want. But anyway, good question. You know, we might have our own baggage. You got to You know, let it go and focus on the other person.
So next, now you've identified these three elements: curiosity, awareness, and skills. And hopefully, if listeners are taking notes, because you're not seeing this, I'm going to assume that you've created some kind of a system or a structure that these fit in to allow us to find the opportunities that are hidden in plain sight.
Well, I did create a Venn diagram, and people can find it on my website under the speaking tab. I need to add more to it, but right now you can see the diagram under the speaking tab.
And your website is?
SusanTrivers.com. Yes.
Okay.
SusanTrivers.com.
Okay.
And okay, that's thank you. And so if you want to look at it, at a picture of it, but I can tell you, so a Venn diagram, you know, has two or three circles. Mine has three, one for each of the characteristics we just talked about: curiosity, awareness, and skill. And they intersect in the middle, and out of the intersection in the middle comes opportunities.
Hmm.
So that is a visual representation of everything that I've been talking about right now. And the point is that when you have only two of the three elements, you don't get opportunities. You know, you get other things. And I think it's important to have the sense of that you need all three. I could go in very briefly into what the result is if you have only two of the three. Shall I do that?
I think we're going to add a little level of suspense and say we're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, let's dive into the element, what happens when we only have two out of the three, and what do we do about that?
Perfect.
So with that, everybody hang on. We will be right back in a couple of minutes.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
You know those money-making ideas in your head that keep you awake at night? And your life-changing thoughts in the shower that dry up after you dry off? Well, it's time to get them out of your head and into action with Sylvia Henderson and IdeaSuccessNetwork.com. Aren't you tired of having all those ideas, dreaming your dreams, setting goal after goal, and putting out intentions, yet still facing challenges to be fully in action? It's time to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Enter your name and email address at IdeaSuccessNetwork.com to get tips and strategies for implementing your ideas with Sylvia's Idea Success Notes. You'll also get a bonus thank you gift for doing so. Don't waste another minute. Go to IdeaSuccessNetwork.com. Now and get your idea success notes for moving your ideas to action.
And welcome back to Idea Success with Sylvia and my guest Susan Trivers. We, before the break, held that little teaser that said, you know, you covered these three elements of HIPS, as you call it, hidden in plain sight, which were curiosity, awareness, and skills. And you said that, you know, you had a diagram, a Venn the three circles, and the middle, the intersection of those three circles was the opportunity that we have in our hidden in our organization. So, you know, you said if one of those circles is missing, one of those elements, we have something else. You want to expand on that?
Yes. Okay. So if you imagine the three circles intersecting, two, each pair intersects, and then they all intersect in the middle. So I'm going to talk about the three pairs that are possible. If you have awareness and skills, but you don't have curiosity, you're ending up with commodities. And I mean that, I say that because curiosity is what leads you to the unusual stuff. What gap am I filling? What's not being done? And so if you have awareness and you have skills, you're generally producing or offering to your market a commodity. Now, what's wrong with commodities? Commodities, especially in this day and age when everything is easy to access electronically, so, you know, there's little barriers to entry. Commodities are very price-driven, and there's always going to be another commodity producer who's going to lower their price below yours, and then what do you do? Mm-hmm. So whether it's an intellectual property product, you know, knowledge work, or it's an actual tangible product, commodities are, it's very hard to make any profit on commodities. You might make revenue, but you're not making profit. And I think eventually the lack of profit drives you to zero profit or even losses, and then you have to decide if you keep going or not. But that's a different question. But that's the problem. So you have awareness and skills, but no curiosity. You've got commodities. If you have awareness and curiosity, but no skills, you'll never get out the door. In other words, it was the skills, I said, that allow you to go to market. And when you go to market, how to handle, you know, how to attract buyers, how to handle the revenue that comes in, how to retain customers or increase customer loyalty, how to do your financials, how to do the technology that supports your business, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you can be very curious and very aware, and if you have no skills, you know, you're not in business because no one's buying anything. So that's why it's important to have skills. Although I do think that most companies and organizations are stronger on the skill side than the others. But I have come across, I have a little story later about a couple with low skills.
And I'm going to assume that you mean having the right skills too.
True. Right.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go on and rather than
interrupt.
Yeah,
no, you know, so here's what I just thought. One of the skills is communicating with your customers. So let's say that you have a business that's very personalized where, I mean, the buyers want to know you and you offer customized solutions. This is certainly consulting, legal, and accounting services. Everything is, you know, you have your relationship with the customer directs what you do for them. If you think that having an off-the-shelf customer relationship management system is the right approach to retaining those customers, you're wrong.
Right.
In other words, you're missing the skill of customer communication, even though you have a product that supposedly helps you do that.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot to the skills. And, I mean, certainly how many people, and I think that, Sylvia, you and I know many, who are successful at bringing in money, revenue. They get out there, they have customers, but they have no money in their pocket because they don't have good financial management skills.
Okay.
You know, they try to do it themselves and they don't know what they're doing. They end up paying too much in taxes or they have nothing left for retirement. So, you know, that's another skill set that you need to make sure that you have in order to maximize the value of your awareness and curiosity.
Okay, great.
Okay. So the next one, the third pair, mm-hmm. is when you have curiosity and skills but no awareness. And here's where I say you have great ideas and you have the ability to manage your business, but you actually end up with no buyers. Remember we mm-hmm. talked about awareness as being the perception of the needs of your buyers.
Yes.
And yes. So you could have, and you know, we all have these great ideas, and we don't know if somebody's going to buy them or not. So that's where the awareness comes in. And, you know, sometimes you have a product or an offering, I call products and services offerings, that's so amazing, and no one was out there saying, oh, I need this, and I would posit that the smartphone is a perfect example of this, and then suddenly it's out there and everybody wants one. But most of us are not inventing the smartphone. So you need to have awareness. What is it that people really want to buy? Can you sell coaching to people who've had a bad experience with coaching? Well, maybe you could. Once you are aware of what those bad experiences were and how to talk to a person like that to overcome their resistance. So that's why I say that without awareness, you really don't have any buyers, or certainly not as many. Go ahead.
Yeah, and what you were just saying, I'm in the middle of reading a book, Lean Startup, and it talks about quickly ramping your business up or your product up without a whole lot of, without being lost in the analysis of paralysis of analysis.
Right.
And, making yourself aware of what buyers might need and just doing a minimum viable product to find out how people react to that and then improving on it once you're aware of, the reaction to your basic product or your basic service. And that's what came to my mind while you were when you were talking about that.
Well, I think that's like a second or a third step of awareness. That you should, here's what I would advise somebody is to really make a case for your product based on the needs or the frustrations or the goals of your target market so that, you have a chance to sell, assuming you have the skills to sell and you are providing something based on your curiosity that's filling a gap that exists, then you can approach that or make it available to that target market and you have a chance of them, becoming buyers. And then, as you were saying, as you refine that or you deepen that and you expand that, what is it? Is this the version they really want to buy, or can we, make another version that would be even more interesting? But I think that my takeaway on awareness is that I'm not talking about market research and data from other sources. I'm talking about you being aware or perceiving what your customers or your intended customers think, care about, are troubled by, are happy about, are eager to have, the goals they have.
Okay.
It's much more than data.
Okay. And you probably have to drill that into people's heads constantly.
Yes.
So is the process of finding the opportunities hidden in plain sight, does that entail having a formal meeting? Does it entail sending out surveys to your people in the company? And I remember, I come from the old line corporate world where, oh my God, we always got these surveys about what we're thinking or how we're feeling. Or management by walking around where leaders walked around and got input from people. How do we get out of that, or how does your process play out within an organization? How does it get implemented?
Sure. Well, like I said, most people call me because they want to grow, and they're looking for ways to grow. And the first one of the early questions I ask them is, are you looking to make major investments or not? Well, of course, almost everybody says no. If we can grow without making major investments, and I'm talking about product development, so you start with R&D, you have whether it's a hard, tangible product or an intellectual product, there's still research, there's still development, there's meetings, there's decisions, there's endless stuff, or you might need structural investment, a new office, more hires, more plant someplace, I don't know, whatever it is. And most of the time, they say, well, if we could grow without having that major investment, that would be wonderful. And so that's sort of the starting point. And then I try to learn a lot about their business. I have a lot of questions to ask that are, you don't need any facts or you don't need many facts in order to answer my questions. Again, I am talking to leaders, owners, business owners, executives, decision makers who have a good pulse, their finger on the pulse of their business pretty well. And so, you know, this is a conversation, again, not collecting a lot of data, like you said, not doing surveys. And then as I get a better handle on what their current situation is, I will introduce the concepts of curiosity, awareness, and skills, and we will discuss, you know, have you ever thought about, you know, what gaps might there be that you could fill, or, you know, what's not being done, or what do you love to do, and have you gotten away from that, and could you get back to that? Those are the curiosity questions. You know, the awareness questions. What's your perception of your buyers or potential buyers? And certainly the skills questions, you know, related to your business skills. But perhaps I could give an example of a company that I worked with recently.
Sure.
Explain, make it come more alive for our listeners.
Yes. Of course, the names are changed to protect the innocent.
Yeah, no names here, but I'll just say, you know, this is the owner of an automotive services company, been in business for more than 20 years, has a very viable, strong business. People love him. He's got a lot of loyal clients. So he's facing something very interesting, which was a physical capacity ceiling. You know, his garage has only X number of spaces, and his staff has only X number of hours to work on cars. Mm. And he charges, as most of those businesses do, time and materials. And one of his reasons for being so successful is that people trust him completely. And if he doesn't have to do a $1,500 repair job on your car, he won't, you know. So how do you deal with the capacity? So I said, you know, that he was aware of his customers. He knew who his best customers were. He knows how many people have been customers of his for, you know, a year, 5 years, 10 years, et cetera. He knows who refers him. He had a lot of awareness of his customers, and he had all the skills that he needed to do his automotive services work. But he had no curiosity. I mean, that became this guy isn't even thinking about, you know, the questions you might ask if you're curious.
Okay.
So I said, I asked him a series of questions about, you know, that I called unleashing his curiosity. And I said, you know, so is there anything that's your best customers, think about your best customers, would love to have from you that you don't offer? And he said, yeah, they would really like to not have to drop their cars off and pick them up.
Uh-huh.
And other things like that. Convenience and comfort were the big issues or the big desires of his best customers. And, you know, you do have to stratify your customers. So we were focused on the best customers.
Okay.
And when we realized that convenience and comfort were really, really, really appealing to those customers, we said, well, here's the curiosity question. What would happen if we offered them a convenience package, fixed fee for a year, paid in advance, that assured them that anytime they needed service, Tom or one of his people would go and get the car, or the customer would bring the car and they would get a town car to take them to their office and pick them up.
Ooh.
And so he said they would love that. They don't want to come here to my little shop,
mm-hmm.
but they want me to service their cars. So that was an opportunity that was born of curiosity. It didn't require very much in the way of investment. You know, we sat down and we brainstormed two VIP packages, different services at different price points, talked about how he would go to these people's offices and sell them on the idea, and then, you know, the resources he would have to have as needed to fulfill it. He didn't have to buy anything. He just calls a limousine company when he needs a car to pick these people up.
Wow.
So there's no investment. And in the first 2 months, he sold 12 of these packages.
Whoa.
Have nothing to do with his physical capacity. That's, you know, it's a lot of revenue. It's also a lot of profit. This is a perfect example of hidden in plain sight, opportunities that are hidden in plain sight, and that came about by being curious.
Mm. Wow. Okay, that was dramatic enough to ask you if there's another example of one of the other two combinations and
yes.
missing a third.
Yes. actually, I have another example on curiosity, which I will make much more, I will make briefer, and then I'll go on to something else. This is a company that consults with hospital laboratories, senior executives at hospitals who are running laboratories. And my client, the consulting company, has great skills and a lot of awareness, also low on curiosity. And this, totally different from the automotive guy, they never asked the executives they were talking about what those executives think about the data and the, conventional wisdom in the hospital laboratory industry. They just do it. And so, you know, everybody will talk about, you know, medical costs are going up and there's all this pressure to bring them down and it's going to hurt people's incomes and, you know, whatever. We all know that healthcare is a big topic of conversation, you know, these days. And so my client never checked with her potential customers to see what they thought about all this conventional wisdom. When she did start to check with them and she found out that they bought it all, instead of sort of sympathizing with them, she said, guess what? I can prove to you that it's wrong. It may be conventional, but it's wrong. And she, her company has a lot of data. Here's where data came into play. Mm-hmm. And she was able to make people stop and think, wow, you know, I've just been going along with the conventional wisdom because, you know, if you hear it enough times, you start to believe it.
Right.
And when my client, the owner of the consulting firm, became curious herself and asked her customers what they were, you know, curious about, she was able to change her approach and has become very effective in increasing her business. So curiosity takes a lot of can be different. Now, real quick on awareness and curiosity, but limited skills, and this is one I wanted to talk about. So I'm working with a pair of young filmmakers. They have their own filmmaking company, and they have excellent creative skills. They have a lot of awareness of the value of video and the kinds of industries that would enjoy, you know, would appreciate the value that video provides. And they're curious about the things that are not being done in video, both for just in video itself and then for these various industries that they're targeting. And then when I started to work with them, it was very clear to me that they have almost zero marketing skills.
Okay.
And so now they're creative, but they don't have marketing skills. And one of the things that they bought into was, well, everybody's going to pay for the video, like the input. And so I have been talking to them about talking to their clients about the value of the video, the outcome mm-hmm. of having a video.
Okay.
And sorry about my dog.
Hey, you know, everybody sees both of you on the website because we have a picture of you. So
there you go.
Just your partner. There you go.
He must be agreeing with something that I just said, right? Anyway, so these young filmmakers, I spend, you know, an hour every other week talking to them, coaching them through the value conversation. And they are getting more and more skilled at having the value conversation, at, first of all, introducing the concept of value, second of all, responding to the people they're talking to when they say, well, what's it going to cost? They turn the question around to, let's talk about the value of it. And, you know, how you articulate value when you submit a proposal for a project. So that's an example where they didn't have the business skill that they needed to get a lot of business for their product, even though they had awareness and curiosity. So
and
that helped.
So a lot. Great. And so to remind listeners of what generated the thought process to begin with each time, you said early on that it was the question of, I want to grow and I don't know how, or I need I'm netting that out, but is it? That's basically the question that leads to all of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, I would also like to say that, you know, we're in 2015 now, and I think there are many opportunities for growth in the economy. You can listen to a lot of the doom and gloom, and I just shrug it off because I don't believe it. And I think all of our listeners are looking for good news and can recognize that there are many opportunities. So this is the time not to say, oh, my gosh, how can I, you know, prevent myself from going out of business. It's the time to say, how can I grow and be a bigger and better business than ever before?
And how can I reach Susan Trivers is the other question. So what's your website again?
Okay, so it's susantrivers.com. You can send me an email. You can get my phone number off the website. I'm very easy to find. I'm on LinkedIn. You know, always look forward to talking with people.
And so we have a few minutes left. I'm going to take a real quick break. When we come back, probably my question is going to be, what haven't we talked about in terms of things of opportunities being hidden in plain sight that you want to make sure listeners get before we're done with our conversation today? So I'll let you think about that, and we'll be right back. Okay, maybe we'll be right back. There was a technical difficulty again with playing the commercial, so that's even better. We get right back to the content. Yes, I love technology. He agrees. So we are back one last time, and we're talking about finding opportunities that are hidden in plain sight, getting those ideas that we didn't even know we had in our organization in order to grow our businesses. And so right before the break, I asked you, what is it that we haven't talked about that you really want to make sure listeners get in the next, I'll say, 10 minutes or so?
Okay, well, that's a great question because there is something really important. We talk, and you do, and I do, a lot about opportunities, and it's that's a very broad word, ideas, opportunities, very broad. And I have actually thought a lot about what does the word opportunities encompass? And so I'm dividing that concept, that opportunities, into three types: inventions, innovations, and improvements. And so I'd like to spend a couple of minutes talking about those three things. I think inventions are, you know, things that are completely starting from scratch. The patent office describes them as non-obvious. And I think one of the most notable inventions of our modern times is the smartphone, Apple's smartphone, the first iPhone. I mean, who thought that they needed to have a phone, email, music, and, you know, a zillion apps on this one little device that fits in a pocket?
Okay.
And Apple
true.
Spent a lot of time and money, and they have the money, to invent the smartphone. So that's an example of invention. And I also think for most companies, I mean the majority, whether they're huge or smaller, inventions are very difficult.
Okay.
So I'm not suggesting when I do work with my clients and the people that you work with that we're looking at inventions. We're not going to invent the equivalent of an iPhone. However, innovations are very possible, and innovations make inventions better.
Okay.
So we certainly know that once the iPhone was out there, we have Android phones, and we have many other manufacturers. You know, Android is the operating system, and you have many manufacturers who are making Android phones. And they were, you know, based, those innovations were based on the invention of the smartphone.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, for another example, I think jet planes or jet engines are innovations on the original invention of the first airplane.
Okay.
So I hope people get this sense of, you know, what's an invention and what's an innovation. And so I think that many of our clients can succeed with and grow using innovations to existing products or services. Improvements are the easiest to create, and they might be changes in size or other factors, you know, going back to the smartphone, we have size, we have resolution, we have a camera on the back as well as the front, battery length and things like that. Those are improvements. Now, many of us can come up with improvements. You might shorten something or produce it quicker or increase the value of it or something, you know, fairly quickly. And so let's talk about, so improvements are very much within most businesses' capacity to do without major investment, which is what we were talking about. So my focus in the Hidden in Plain Sight is on the innovations and in improvements. Now, I would say the story that I told you about the auto repair service, you know, his idea of having these VIP packages was an innovation. In other words, it was totally new to that business, although not new generally. We know many places that have VIP packages. So it's an innovation for independently owned, small, you know, automotive service repair services. Improvement might be the way you deliver something. Speed is always appreciated, and you can actually create a lot of value by giving somebody something sooner rather than later.
Okay.
So people can think about how do they speed up the delivery of the value that they offer. That would be an improvement. The other thing to keep in mind is my belief that innovations give you extraordinary profits or beyond the normal profits for 3 years. And by the time 3 years is up, other people have joined you, and so you're no longer, that thing is no longer an innovation. It's common. Everybody's doing it.
Whoa, you actually have a time range in there, 3 years.
3 years. Well, I mean, you know, I think 3 years is great, but it's only 3 years. So it means that you can't innovate today and never innovate again.
Right. You can't
do that. People need to be thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that there, you know, if a company or an organization was to innovate every year and they created a string of 3 year returns, extraordinary returns over a period of, you know, 15 years, that would be super.
Right.
So innovation's
right.
Not a one-time thing.
Okay.
It can be a series of things. Improvements, I think, can possibly or likely increase profits for 1 year. So it's something you have to do. You have to do it really well. You have to get it out there. Again, no analysis paralysis. Do it. And take your extraordinary profits, put them in your pocket, and think for the next improvement.
Wow.
And this is where I think a lot of businesses get hung up. They rework and rework and rework the same thing. And then there are no extraordinary profits.
I love how you broke that down, because I know for me, people come to me and say, you know, when I say I help you get your ideas out of your head and into action, you go, oh, well, I don't have any new, you know, oh, I don't have a new idea. I don't have something that big. And I'm thinking that they're thinking they don't have an invention.
Correct.
Based on using your terms.
Right.
And I usually end up having to educate, and I say, do you have thoughts? Do you have a project you're working on? Do you have plans and intentions? And they, we have all them. I say, those are ideas. Those are, and I, so, you know, are you not getting some of those done? Well, I had this intention at the beginning of the year or whatever. And they're like, okay, I can help you get that. That's an idea. So I end up with a lot of educating. I need to figure out how to make my own marketing a little more succinct. But what your divisions were of innovation and improvement, I'm thinking, yes, that's what most people have. And I wish I could get them to realize it doesn't have to be brand new.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that taking action, which I know is your emphasis, is the critical thing. And here's how this ties together. If you are paying attention, so you're curious, you have awareness, and you have skills, you've got some new ideas that are either innovations or improvements, and you don't have to invest a lot to get them out the door, then do it sooner rather than later.
Mm.
Because you lose very little by acting. In fact, I would say you lose a lot less by acting than by not acting. Because here's the other thing, and I hate to say this, but I believe it's totally true. And I know you have a story about this too, which I won't repeat, but is, you know, if you've got an idea, someone else has an idea too, that same
that's
idea.
True.
Right? And
yep.
So you and me and all of our listeners have to act on the idea, because I would bet money that someone else in the same industry has got that idea and they're just waiting to for the right time to get out there with it. So why aren't you the first one? Be the first one.
And we get so tied up in perfection rather than good enough.
Totally. Success, not perfection. Success means you've increased your revenue and you've increased your profits for 1 to 3 years. That's not bad.
Nope. So to wrap this up, how do we maximize the opportunities that we discover with the curiosity, with awareness and skills? How do we maximize the opportunity? And once again, what do you do to help businesses do that, and how do they reach you?
Okay. So there are two ways to maximize the opportunities that you discover within. The first is to provide new offerings to existing buyers, and the second is to provide the same offerings, your new and improved offerings, to new buyers.
Okay.
Okay, now when you think in terms of new offerings to existing buyers, you have a huge advantage over anybody else, and that is you know your buyers. Like my automotive service guy, he knows his buyers. My hospital consultant, she knows her buyers. Mm. So she's got built in that awareness and curiosity to get, you know, to focus the new offerings, the improvements and the innovations to those people. And you get to go to them, and you don't say, hey, this is brand new, I just invented it. You say to them, you know, I know for the last 3 years, every time we talk, you've been telling me about X, a problem, a desire, an objective, whatever.
Okay.
And now we have something to offer you that will help you get X. They're like, oh, wow, that's terrific. Let's buy it. Let's do it. Whatever. New offerings to existing buyers, very powerful, very little additional investment. You know, just the creative part, but very little additional investment. When you either your existing offerings to new buyers, the thing that you want to think about is what buyers are 80 to 90% like my current buyers. And usually it's not industry, it's need. So, you know, the story I told you at the beginning about the washing and storing the parts, heavy equipment, you know, the military is very different from some of the commercial customers that this client of mine is now selling to. So industry was not the question. The question was, who else has equipment that needs to be washed and stored? And we went through, just sat around the table and said, what other buyers are 80 to 90% like your existing buyers?
Okay.
Most likely it's not industry-based. In other words, you know, they don't have to be in the same industry as your typical buyers. They have to have similar needs, which could be different industries. Okay? And so that's how you maximize your opportunities with something that already exists. The hidden in plain sight is to say, oh, yeah, well, you know, even though our typical buyer is in this industry, hey, there are these other three industries that have the same needs. Let's market to them.
How do businesses reach you, and how do you help folks find their hidden in plain sight opportunities?
So people can reach me. Please go to my website, again, susantrivers.com, and you can find an email address there for me and my phone number. I'm also on LinkedIn at Susan Trivers. And so the best way to get started is by sending me a note saying you'd like to talk. All of my work is customized. I have no off-the-shelf offerings. Nothing is applied. I have no processes or systems that I sell. Everything is customized to the particular needs of each company, each client. And I'd like to say that I am the expert in growth and opportunity, and my clients are the experts in their business. So I can work with any company, any business, because you have that expertise, I have the growth and opportunity expertise.
Excellent. Susan, thank you so much for being my guest today. And to my listeners, thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot, Sylvia.
Okie doke.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up another hour of Ideas Success with Sylvia, with information and inspiration to turn your dreams into dollars, your concepts into cash, and your ideas into income and impact. Join me next week, same dot time, same dot channel, same dot number, for another episode of Ideas Success with Sylvia.